Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
You're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 472. I'm Amy Matheny, and wow, we had the big Windy City Gay Idol semifinals this past Saturday, and so now we have our top finalist going to the finals on June 16th at Sidetrack. It is going to be a day to put on your calendars right now, folks. June 16th at Sidetrack. 2 o'clock doors, 3 o'clock show starts. It's going to be a fantastic show. Guest performers, everybody who comes through the door as an audience member is going to be entered to win a trip for two to Vancouver, tickets to Rock of Ages, and so much more. And our gay idol walking away with $1,000 cash, a trip to Vancouver, lots of theater tickets and other prizes and opportunities to perform around the city of Chicago and even beyond. So it's pretty, pretty exciting. Also, I had the good fortune of singing on Sunday with a great group of GLBT artists and allies, a few allies, in the concert for Singing Out Loud at the beautiful main stage put together by Daryl Nitz with George Howe playing on the piano, and the Chicago Cabaret Project was there, and Honey West was there, and Steven Rader was there, and I was there, and Megan Murphy. And Scott Montgomery, who I hadn't seen in forever, having him on the radio a long time ago. Some just amazing, amazing performers all around, and many, many more I'm leaving out. But it was a really fantastic night at the main stage, and I was so honored to be a part of it. And Mitchell Fain is back. He's here. He's in Chicago. And within less than 12 hours of landing back in Chicago after his months away entertaining everybody on the cruise ships with the Second City, he was judging at Gay Idol on Saturday. So he's back, and he'll be on our next show as we sit down and talk about Idol. We talk about his trip and much, much more. There's so much we have to catch up on. And I've barely had any time to really talk to him. And we live in the same house. So, Mitchell Fain and I will sit down to record so that I can get a little FaceTime with him. But I am so thrilled for the time that I had to sit and talk with our guest today, Shelley Wright. She came out in 2010, right before the Chicago Gay Pride Parade, and she was the Grand Marshal in 2010 for Chicago for our GLBT parade. And it has been amazing what has happened in the past 2 years with her life and her career, much of what we're going to talk about, but also just how she's walked through this coming out process with such grace and integrity and a really strong, clear voice for the GLBT community. And we talk about the whole story of how her coming out came to be, the struggles she had hiding in the closet, what these past couple of years have been, some of the joys, some of the struggles, Because she's coming back here for a concert with the Backlot Bash, a big women's four-day festival around Pride this month. So you're going to want to make plans for that. Plus, Kirk and I give you the week in news brought to you by Windy City Times and what's going on in the theater scenes. Shows are popping up. And this week, I'm going to be heading to the Goodman to go see the opening night of Immediate Family, directed by Felicia Rashad, with the openly gay and incredibly fantastic Paul Oakley Stovall as the playwright of that play. So I'm looking forward to that. It's a big show, guys. And Shelley Wright here on the Queercast, the whole show right now.
Get ready to put on your dancing shoes. Dancing Queen, the musical extravaganza that will have you dancing in the aisles to the very best of ABBA and the greatest hits of the 70s. Dancing Queen, June 14th through 24th at Chicago's new Riverfront Theater. For tickets, call 888-556-9484 or visit riverfronttheater.com. That's riverfronttheater.com.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News. A federal appeals court has ruled that the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, which prohibits many federal benefits to same-sex married couples, is unconstitutional. The first U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in Boston ruled May 31st that DOMA, which defines marriage as a union between a man and a woman, discriminates against gay couples. DOMA was passed in 1996. Since then, many states, most recently North Carolina, have installed their own bans on same-sex marriage.
After a student complained to the U.S. Department of Justice, the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith is changing its policy regarding restroom use by transgender people. Transgender woman Jennifer Brawley, a 38-year-old junior at the school, was upset after being told to use gender-neutral only restrooms on campus. Another student had complained about Brawley using the women's restroom. Brawley is again allowed to use women's restrooms.
The United States District Court for the Northern District of California granted judgment in favor of gay and lesbian state workers who, together with their registered domestic partners, are excluded from equal access to California's long-term care program. The judge issued the ruling in Dragovich v. CalPERS, a class action lawsuit challenging federal and state laws, including the Defense of Marriage Act, that regulates state-sponsored long-term care plans.
2 years after a major situation occurred over Target supporting anti-gay gubernatorial candidate Tom Emmer, the corporation is now launching an online charitable partnership that supports gay pride. 10 t-shirts are now on Target's website with gay-friendly themes. The Minneapolis-based chain has partnered with the Family Equality Council, which backs LGBT families, for more than a decade.
Woody Woodruff, Mr. Michigan Leather 2012. Was chosen as a new international Mr. Leather on May 27th at the Hyatt Regency Chicago. First runner-up AC Demidont, who was Mr. Eagle New York of 2012, and second runner-up Kevin Jordan, Mr. DC Eagle 2012, shared the spotlight at the contest, now in its 34th year.
Oklahoma State Senator Al McAfee and partner David Stinson woke up recently to find the U.S. flag in their front yard on fire. The couple didn't feel the incident was a hate crime, but condemned it as sacrilege on Memorial Day weekend.
New York's Leslie Lohman Museum of Gay and Lesbian Art has received a museum accreditation from the state. The New York City facility has become the world's first gay museum. The museum was established in 1990.
In a recent nationwide Wells Fargo retirement survey, LGBT non-retirees reported a higher level of confidence in their retirement savings compared to the general population. 61% of LGBT non-retirees felt confident they would have enough saved by the time they retire to live how they want through their retirement, significantly higher than the 53% cited by the general population. However, 36% of LGBT non-retirees expect they will need to work during retirement in order to afford their lifestyle, which is lower than the 41% of the general population.
Zach Walls, an Eagle Scout whose YouTube video in support of his two gay moms went viral last year, delivered a petition urging the Boy Scouts of America to reinstate Jennifer Tyrell, an Ohio mother ousted as den leader of her 7-year-old Cub Scout troop because of her sexual orientation. The petition had more than 275,000 signatures. Walls delivered the document during the Boy Scouts National Annual Meeting in Florida on May 30th.
The California State Senate approved a bill designed to limit the ability of mental health providers throughout the state to engage in so-called ex-gay therapy, also called conversion therapy or reparative therapy. If the Assembly approves the measure and Governor Jerry Brown signs it, California would be the first state to ban licensed mental health professionals from trying to change the sexual orientation of minors.
In Flagstaff, Arizona, the city council has agreed to review an LGBT rights ordinance. Five of the current seven members have agreed on a timeline to start formally reviewing a new measure that would add gender identity and sexual orientation to the list of traits protected in the areas of education, housing, employment, and public accommodations.
In New Jersey, Democratic state senators denied the nation's first gay black Republican mayor a chance to sit on the state Supreme Court. By a 7-6 vote, the New Jersey Senate Judiciary Committee voted against confirming Chatham Mayor Bruce Harris to the court. The Democrats attacked Harris's lack of courtroom experience as a public finance attorney and his announcement that he will recuse himself from any marriage equality cases.
In world news, in Moscow, authorities detained approximately 40 people on May 27th as a result of two pro-gay demonstrations, which drew Orthodox Christian counter-protesters. A fight broke out between the groups at one site. When police ordered the crowds to disperse, the LGBT group tried to hold a second rally at City Hall. Police then broke it up and pushed people from both groups into buses.
By a vote of 430-105, the European Parliament has adopted a resolution condemning anti-gay laws. The legislative body specifically called on Russia, Moldova, Latvia, Lithuania, and the Ukraine to address existing measures and draft legislation that would demonstrate and ensure respect for the principle of non-discrimination. The resolution added that EU member states should be exemplary in the application and protection of fundamental rights in Europe.
Zimbabwe President Robert Mugabe said that homosexuality doesn't belong anywhere in his country. Mugabe, who is 88, said during a conference on HIV/AIDS and gender rights that what he called the gay world goes against nature. Mugabe, who has repeatedly described same-sex couples as lower than dogs and pigs, is determined not to allow gay rights to be included in a new constitution that is being drafted.
In England, transgender teen Jackie Green fell short in her quest to reach the finals of the Miss England pageant. Green, age 18, was born Jackie, but 2 years ago underwent gender reassignment surgery in Thailand.
In entertainment news, Jillian Michaels, the trainer who was on the TV show The Biggest Loser, has adopted a 2-year-old Haitian girl. Michaels and her partner Heidi Rhodes welcomed their daughter just days after Rhodes gave birth to a baby boy on May 3rd.
Food Network star Anne Burrell has confirmed she's a lesbian after fellow network personality Ted Allen made a reference to her sexuality on a radio program. Allen said in a radio interview that Burrell was dating a woman who reportedly works at the Chicago eatery Avec. Burrell's rep said Anne doesn't feel she was outed. She's made no secret about her relationship.
In the world of DC Comics, the original Green Lantern, who was first introduced in 1940, will be reintroduced as gay in the second issue of Earth 2, hitting stores June 6th. The publisher decided to reboot the entire fictional universe last year, a development that now shows the heroes as younger versions of themselves. DC Comics also has a lesbian superhero, Batwoman.
3 years after getting engaged at a marriage equality rally, Sex and the City actress Cynthia Nixon, age 46, married education activist Christine Marinoni May 27th in New York. Nixon's rep said the actress wore a custom dress by Carolina Herrera. Marinoni gave birth to their son in February of 2011.
Singer Corey Hart, best known for his 80s hit, I Wear My Sunglasses at Night, has released a remix of a pro-gay song. His 1988 album, Young Man Running, included the song Truth Will Set You Free, which he intended as an anthem for those struggling with their sexuality. Now, Hart is issuing a dance floor mix of the tune, and it has new lyrics inspired by the 1998 murder of Matthew Shepard.
Clarice Starling, the FBI agent brought to life on the big screen by Jodie Foster in Silence of the Lambs, is the focal point of a new series in development for Lifetime. Going by the title Clarice, the series will focus on Starling's early career just after she receives her FBI qualifications. No actress has been mentioned in connection with the role.
And Lady Gaga has set yet another record. She is the first person to have 25 million followers on Twitter. The You and I singer was also the first person to reach the milestones of 10 million, 15 million, and 20 million followers on the social networking site. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey guys, this is Elizabeth Kina, and you're on the Windy City Queercast. Have a good one.
Named in 2011 as one of the top art fairs in the country by American Style magazine, the Old Town Art Fair celebrates its 63rd anniversary June 9th and 10th. Along the charming tree-lined streets of Chicago's historic Old Town Triangle District, view the work of 260 nationally acclaimed artists with an estimated 50,000 art lovers. The Old Town Art Fair will feature a wide range of art mediums, including 2D and 3D mixed media, drawing, painting, photography, printmaking, ceramics, fiber, glass, jewelry, and works in metal, stone, and wood. Plus, a music stage featuring national talent, cooking demonstrations, and a food court populated by local eateries. The main gate of the Old Town Art Fair is located at Lincoln Avenue and Wisconsin Street. There is a $7 suggested donation. Children under 12 are free. Don't miss the Old Town Art Fair, June 9th and 10th. For more information on the art, bands, food, and events, visit oldtownartfair.org.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 4th, 2012, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Broadway director David Cromer delivers a powerful new production of Jonathan Larson's Tony Award-winning musical, Rent. Produced by About Face Theater and an American theater company, Rent plays now through June 17th. Time Out Chicago gives the show 4 stars, and Chicago Tribune's Chris Jones says he has never seen a more honest, moving staging. Tickets available through aboutfacetheater.com.
Don't miss Immediate Family, a new American play written by Paul Oakley Stovall and directed by Tony Award winner Felicia Rashad. Modern family meets soul food in this funny, heartwarming show set in Chicago's Hyde Park, playing now through August 5th at the Goodman Theater. Visit ImmediateFamilyPlay.com.
David Drake's The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me, a beautiful play about a gay man coming into a life of protest and glory, is presented in the 20th anniversary production by Glitterati Productions and Pride Films and Plays. Jad Ryan stars in The Night Larry Kramer Kissed Me, June 20th to July 1st at Luna Central, 3914 North Clark Street. For tickets, visit PrideFilmsAndPlays.com.
It's the last week to catch the Tony-nominated musical title of show at Northlight Theater. This original musical comedy about four friends navigating their way through creative differences and commercial success, the New York Times calls catnip for show queens, and the Memphis Flyer raves pretty bleeping good. For tickets to title of show, visit northlight.org. It must close June 10th.
And for more Culture Club, visit windycitytimes.com.
Anyone out there? Bueller, Bueller, post a comment at windycityqueercast.com.
You won't eat a tomato on a double dog dare. You don't think you're a beauty, but you do like your hair. You're complex and tricky, yet some ways you're not. You're up some, you're down some, you're cold and you're hot. And who's gonna end up holding your hand? A beautiful woman or a tall, handsome man? There's no doubt they'll love you, but it's yet to be seen. Will any
In May of 2010, Shelley Wright, the Nashville hit maker of Single White Female and Shut Up and Drive, made history when she became the first country artist to come out. After decades of hiding in the closet, she finally said, "I'm a lesbian." And when you say that to People Magazine and Oprah, everyone knows instantly. And with her announcement came just an absolutely courageous and brave autobiography called Like Me, and a new CD called Lifted Off the Ground, a collection of songs written from her truly most transparent and vulnerable voice, and maybe started a whole it sounded like almost her first CD in a way of this new life. So life has changed for Shelley Wright, and these past 2 years have been full, earning her awards from GLSEN, Out and Equal, and many other GLBT organizations who recognize her courage and bravery. And we are thrilled to have her on the show. Hey, Shelley, how are you?
I'm great, Amy. I want to take you on the road with me to introduce me every night. You're amazing.
Well, I have to say that I really have, you know, there being a lesbian, and I've been out now, I guess out entirely since 90, let's say mid-90s.
Right.
I just self-identify with you so much. I am from small town East Tennessee. Love of country music, grew up very close to Dolly Parton, neck of the woods. I identify as highly femme. I have been accused many years on the radio of not being lesbian enough. I am a singer, or I have, you know, been a singer in the past. I'm more in theater now and have been doing radio for many, many years. And I feel like when I heard your story, your relationship with your father, when I saw you on Oprah, when I started seeing what the past 20 years had been for you, I went, wow, that's how it could have gone for me if just a few things didn't line up differently for me. And I know many people in East Tennessee who are still hiding or still feel trapped or still feel I'm not putting words into your mouth, but self-loathing or just inability to be authentically who they are and to feel like they're surrounded by a community that allows them to be that. So I'm just honored and feel privileged to talk to you. And it's been nice because I don't often self-identify with somebody who I feel story is so close to mine, at least at its core. So you grew up in a very small Kansas town. Let's talk about music first. Who were those early musical influences that you were listening to and starting to sing and strum guitar with?
Well, first, Amy, let me speak to your what you just said about the kind of the shared story that we have. Mm-hmm. That's remarkable. We have a deep understanding already of one another.
Oh, and I also didn't say I've been an out Christian lesbian on the radio since 97 as well. So,
and that whole strain too. That takes as much courage as coming out as gay to come out as gay.
Yes, it's true.
With the faith practice, it really, because and it's not because the gay community is not a faithful people. It's because we've just been so maligned by many houses of worship for so many years that, you know, it's hard. It seems to be at odds with itself when it really isn't. And so, you know, and what I found in coming out is that, you know, telling my story, whether it be East Tennessee, Nashville, Tennessee, Kansas City, Bakersfield, Fresno, Tillamook, you know, in the Northeast, people have kind of the same experience when they hide, you know, when they hide something so fundamental, and that's been really gratifying. But to answer your question about music, I did grow up in the Midwest. I was born in Kansas City, but raised in a small town in Kansas with about, at that time, maybe 1,600 people. And I knew from age four that I wanted to be a country music singer. Mm-hmm. And so I really grew up on the records of Connie Smith and Loretta Lynn, Bo Gowans, Connolly Twitty. Those were the, you know, Merle Haggard. Those were the artists that really heavily influenced me and made me fall in love with country music.
Yeah. When did you start writing? When did you realize that you weren't just going to sing along, but that you wanted to write?
I used to make up melodies and chord progressions when I was, you know, 5 years old. And I remember my mom coming into the piano room. We had an old upright piano that my great-grandmother had given to us, and there in the parlor by the stairs. And my mom would say, "What song is that?" I'd say, "I don't know." And she'd just not remember what the name of it is. And I said, "No, I'm making it up." And I thought everyone did that. I thought everyone kind of played what was on the radio and made up their own songs. So I started writing lyrics when I was about 11, and I didn't start writing good lyrics until I was about 20. So believe me, you're not going to want to hear those first songs.
Oh, but they're charming. But they led you to where you are. So, you know, you got to start somewhere.
It's a craft that takes a lot of years to kind of try to perfect, and the good thing about writing is you never perfect it. It's kind of exciting for that reason.
Well, and you're always writing from a different perspective, as I said in the intro, you know, a whole new vantage point with Lifted Off the Ground than anything that had come before, I would imagine because from what I remembered hearing that the music started coming out first for you before the writing of the book, and the music almost led to your inevitable moment of knowing that you had to come out. Can you talk about that?
You're one of the few journalists who's ever accurately understood that. My record was not a coming out record. In fact, I wrote those songs over a year before I decided to come out. I wrote those songs as just a direct byproduct of my breakdown. I was having a breakdown. And as I was making the record with the great Rodney Crowell, a great singer, songwriter, producer, we were in the middle of making the record when I realized, how do I go out and talk about these very raw, honest songs? I'm loving this project. How am I going to do interviews and have journalists say, all these songs are about heartbreak and love. We didn't even know you had a relationship.
Mm.
I knew I wasn't going to make up a fake boyfriend in Buenos Aires.
Right.
I knew that I'd recorded the most personal, emotional songs of my life. And I needed to, I was starting to, quite frankly, feel trapped again. I was starting to feel like I had recovered from my breakdown. I didn't, thank God, take my life as one early morning in Nashville I was about to do. And so I was coming back and making this record and starting to get back on my feet again. And that reality started to seep back in on me that I cannot do my life the way I have arranged it. It will not work. And so that's when I decided, with a lot of prayer and a lot of contemplative moments, realizing that I have to be whole. I have to honor every part of myself, and I knew that I wouldn't survive it if I didn't.
Now, you did have a partner while you were living in Nashville and recording the hits that I mentioned, and being a face of an attractive, seemingly heterosexual country artist. You were playing the role well that everyone needed you to play, but you were in a relationship for about a decade. Is that right? Was it about 10 years?
Yeah, it was a little over 10 years, about 12 years.
About 12 years.
From beginning to end.
And did you feel any freedom in that relationship, or what led to that breakdown moment where you, the music then started coming?
Well, I felt some of the freedoms that come along with being in love and being, having a self-assuredness, even privately, that I was, with the person that I cared about. And although there were other outside factors that made me feel hopeless and made me really perhaps not 100% engage in the relationship, because I knew to some degree that it was doomed from the beginning, because you can't love in secret. We would never ask a straight person to never, ever acknowledge the person they love.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I have a lot of people who comment to me publicly on, social media and even to my face. And they'll say things like, enough is enough. We get it. You're gay. Why is it everything's gay all the time? And what they don't realize is that they only notice that they only accuse me of shoving it down their throats, because they don't realize how often the straight world is projected upon everyone. Ask a guy at work, hey, what'd you do this weekend? And when he says, oh, we went to my in-laws and then we jet skied with the kids. That's all really straight stuff.
Yep.
And, I never make a complaint that, God, why is it always so straight? Stop shoving your straightness down my throat, But they, because gay is something that they might be uncomfortable with, they don't realize that all we're doing is talking about our real lives. So when I say, hey, can't wait to have dinner with my wife this weekend, I get accused of everything's so gay all the time. Mm-hmm. No, everything is just so human all the time.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Well,
those outside factors did outweigh the freedoms and the celebration of love that I had with my then partner.
Yeah, because obviously you discovered what it was like to be with a woman, and I'm sure there was some esteemable aspects to that until you can't then take that out in the world, so to speak. And
you know, you cut deals with yourself when you're a kid, you know, and I fell in love with her when I was 23 and still idealistic. And, you know, I'd just gotten my first record deal and I thought, you know, this was something I could manage. I thought I could manage the nuances of who I was and keep the love secret. But when you're 23, you think you can do things like that because you have ego. And my ego really fueled a lot of, I just thought I was more in control than I was. And then when I did have my breakdown and we broke up, I found myself really facing humility in a way that I never had before. I wasn't the most around. I couldn't manage that. I no matter how smart I was or how disciplined, because it took an incredible amount of discipline to be me. No one was more disciplined than me. I worked really hard. I was careful about, you know, I didn't share my secret with anyone. I managed it. But I had also painted myself into this corner of a life that I didn't want anymore.
Right. So these songs start coming out from Lifted Off the Ground, such as Broken, such as Like Me, such as all of these songs that, you went on to start putting pen to paper with telling your story in an editorial way and in the memoir, in the autobiography. And this was all chronicled by a film crew who started following this process of you coming out. And the film is now called Wish Me Away, the documentary. It's garnering awards. It's here in theatrical release in June and around the U.S. How did you walk through that fear? You share some moments of that in these very raw personal video diaries that you have interspersed throughout that documentary. But what were you really doing to walk through the fear? We see a spiritual advisor. Did you lean on a few people? How are you doing that?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny that, and by the way, if you hear my dogs in the background, they're playing. And
we love the dogs on the podcast. So
I'm going to go to the other room.
No, it's good.
So they can wrestle.
I can't hear them.
Good. Well, they're adorable. when I made the decision, when I got on my knees and prayed and really kind of surrendered, you know, it, for a person of faith, real surrender has a beautiful byproduct. Of ease. Things become much easier when you really surrender. And I did, and that's when I knew I have to come out. And it's also when I prayed that God would put the right people in my life. And, you know, I'm not saying it wasn't logistically difficult to every day know that, okay, you're about to come out and the repercussions could be bad. But, you know, when I became in contact with the filmmakers, a mutual friend actually said, you know, have you been keeping any video of your experience? Because I was writing my book and making my record and preparing myself to come out. And I said, well, you know, I keep video diaries. I've been keeping these video diaries just, you know, maybe because I look back on it now and I think maybe I was not even sure I would make it through the whole thing. And maybe I was leaving them for my family or loved ones. I don't know what I was doing. But anyway, I have these very personal diaries. And so I met with the TV gals, the filmmakers. I think that's what they call themselves, the TV gals. And they said, we want to make a feature film about you. And I knew it was right. I had to have faith and trust that it would be right. And it wouldn't take it would take another year for me to actually turn those video diaries over to them. Yeah. We developed a lot of trust and you know, the way that you get through, once you decide that you're coming out, you can taste freedom. And as scary as it was in a lot of ways, it was also a huge relief to know that freedom was on its way.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that the role that just the leap of faith that you said about the surrender, with that surrender comes freedom. And we've heard that time and time again. You know, I think one of the more public stories was, you know, when Ellen DeGeneres came out, you know, and I was on the radio at that time too. And, you know, I know young people today who don't remember what a moment that was. They don't know a moment before Ellen DeGeneres was out and having her own talk show. And, and just that willingness to take the leap of faith and know if some things fall apart and it gets messy, you know, life rebuilds itself and it'll be better. It'll be better than feeling, the trap and feeling the trap and feeling the walls and feeling like your world is so small.
And you know, Ellen was so great to me. We had a, you know, some nice conversations about that. And it wasn't without consequence when she came out, you know, people now looking at her, as you mentioned, they all, it looks like Ellen with the biggest hit show for 9 years running, they forget that she had a lot going on before she came out and then she lost it all.
Yep.
Her coming out resulted in a crumble of her empire, and she wouldn't turn back the hands of time. She wouldn't change anything about it. But she, you know, she pulled me aside and said, Shelley, be prepared for a bad fallout. But she said, know this, you will, as you just said, rebuild. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that I was asked by my spiritual advisor, he said, you know, how do you feel about your success now? And, mm-hmm. and what I said to Welton, was, everything that I had before, every hit record I had or hit video or award or nomination, I could never really enjoy those because I felt at any moment someone might come take them from me.
Right.
And it was like I didn't own the car. It was like it was on lease.
Yep.
And then once I came out, the foundation that I was building, every block in it was now mine, and I knew no one could ever take it. And I know that this really resonates with people about their stories. I know that because I've talked to people about that, and they feel an incredible freedom of ownership of their life and knowing that no one can pull a rug out from under you.
Right.
No one can out you if you're out. No one can fire you unfairly. Well, they can, but no one can. Well, they can, and in states where it's illegal to fire someone for being gay, there are lots of ways to get rid of you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
There are lots of ways to make your life miserable at work until you quit.
Mm-hmm.
There are just very little protections for people like us. Therefore, it really underscores the reason why we do need to be in control of our own lives and our own truth. And it's a really empowering feeling to know that you didn't just lease the car, you own the car.
Yeah.
It's yours.
Well, you face the biggest fears, you name them, you call them out, you stand face to face with them. And then what you have in that is a sense of power, you know, in the powerlessness of letting whatever happen, to be truthful and step into that light. You then are free. You're free of that fear. It doesn't mean bad things might not happen. I know that you've had death threats. I know that you've lost people. You've mentioned that, you mentioned the documentary. We should maybe get current on that, that only two people from Nashville had contacted you when you came out. Do you have, after 2 years now, have you had any more communication with old colleagues or friends in Nashville?
Yeah, shortly after I was on Oprah and mentioned that only two artists had contacted me, that was, I think, 10 days into my coming out. And when I got home from Chicago after doing Oprah, I got, you know, Faith Hill has been a good friend of mine for a long time, and she sent the most beautiful email, and she said she was just sick. She was sick that she had, she said, you've been, as she would say, on my heart. And she said, I just saw you on Oprah, and I can't believe that I wasn't one of the ones to reach out to you. She said, it's not because I don't love you and support you. I do. She said, my excuse is I got really busy, and I just meant to and didn't. And she said, you know, I want you to know that I fully support you, and I'm proud of you, and I love you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've had a few of those. The thing that troubles me about the private communications I've had from most artists is that they have no idea that the progress that they could help us make if they would publicly say something in support of gays, in support of LGBT community. Not just,
right.
here's the thing I'm tired of hearing from country artists. Well, I love my LGBT fans. That we need more than that. We need people whom I know in Nashville are are supportive of LGBT equality, but they don't want to say it because they don't want to lose a fan. I need them to publicly say, people like Shelley, my friend Shelley, people like so-and-so deserve every civil liberty that anyone else has. We need mm-hmm. them to not just say they love me even though I'm gay.
Right.
We need to have them articulate the desire for our country to get up to speed and be fair, and that we all have the same constitutional protection. So I've been, you know, Leanne Rimes has been a public supporter of mine. Mm-hmm. Mary Chapin Carpenter publicly supported
lovely.
Me. The girls of Shadazy did, but no one else did.
Yeah. It's really interesting because I've been saying for a decade that truly the revolution with the GLBT community is going to come from straight allies. And I think, you know, this recent, declaration by President Obama in May, I've had many people, you know, even straight people and gay people pretty much equally say, well, yeah, but what does that really do? And I say, it's huge what that does. We had a president who wouldn't mention HIV and AIDS through an 8-year administration while people were dying, you know, so yeah. It's huge that the leader of the free will world, a man who, you know, the rest of the world looked to when we elected him in America as a voice for change, you know, whatever he's done since he's been there, he has been a symbol of something different for America. And for him to say this, I think, has been enormous. Just exactly what you said, that testament to somebody as an ally of ours, and that big of an ally speaking out for us. And Hillary speaking at the UN. You know, these are huge moments globally for us.
It's a game changer. And, you know, as Mayor Bloomberg said, I think it was Mayor Bloomberg or Cuomo, someone from here in New York, said, never before has a president said something about civil rights mm-hmm. and it didn't come to fruition. It never in the history of America.
Right.
It always happens that if a president, a sitting president, says something in regards to civil rights, whether it be African Americans or women, that once they say it in office, it will come to pass. It's not a matter of when, if, it's a matter of when. And, you know, and I know a lot of straight people have said to me what you said. What does it matter? Why aren't civil unions enough? It doesn't matter that he said that. Mm. It does matter. It does matter because as strategic as the GOP is about spreading mistruths about people like us,
right.
And as much as those headlines are in the news, they got to remember there's a young person that watches the news with their parents.
Right.
And it needed to be counterbalanced with the leader, as you said, of the free world saying, you're okay. You're more than okay. You're fully American.
Yeah.
And you deserve everything everyone else has. Those things matter. And young people take those things to heart. And I know the president saved lives by doing what he did.
Absolutely. He has saved lives. Hillary Clinton has saved lives, both of them, with where they've had those platforms and have come to the forefront. Now, you left Nashville, you moved to New York City, you've become this voice for the community, whether you probably wanted to or not, all eyes were going to be on you being I think that was part of the big courageous move, is that you kind of step into some shoes that, you know, like it or not, the ruby red slippers are kind of given to you. And yet that's really been a part of your mission. And everything I've heard is that, you know, you talk about those small town young men and women who had the feelings that you had, that feel trapped. You know, you're a part now of all these great organizations, have lent your name and your voice to so many GLBT causes. Did you have to familiarize yourself with this whole gay world and culture, or had you been kind of keeping up? Because
that's a great question. You know, when I moved to New York in 2008,
uh-huh.
I was finishing my book, but another thing that I was doing was meeting in private on the down low, as they say, with these organizations. Several organizations that I confided in that I was about to come out, and I wanted to be educated, and I wanted to know how I could hit the ground running to be an effective voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a huge team that was working with me to educate me, because frankly, I didn't really understand the modern day logistic struggle, social struggle, legal struggle that my people have had. So
yes.
I I came to gay school.
Yeah, I'm about to say, you're like in college. You like had 101, then you clept that course because you probably knew the entertainment course, but then all the singers and icons, but you probably had to learn all of the other stuff. I just think it's, I think that's fantastic. I think there should be gay college for people who finally get to, you know, leave small town Alabama and let their freedom ring, so to speak.
Well, and here's the thing. It was a very purposeful, intentional, you know, stealing of myself.
Absolutely.
I wanted to steal myself physically, emotionally, spiritually to do what I was about to do. And you know, to comment about your people leaving small town Alabama to go let the freedom ring, my goal is that people won't have to leave their small towns.
Mm.
Not everyone has the ability to pick up and move to an iconically supportive city like L.A. or New York or Chicago. You know, there are people in you know, Russell, Alabama, and Dothan, Alabama, and Little Rock, Arkansas, that should not have to, nor do they have the ability to leave their town, but they shouldn't have to leave their friends and family and their faith practice, their church, their house of worship. We needed to create a world where people don't have to leave. People don't have to leave country music to be who they are. We need
to,
that's our job, and it's incumbent upon those of us who are safe and able, and I want to stress that. I understand why people hide. I get it. There are a lot of reasons why not everyone's safe and able, but I came out to use my voice. It was very purposeful. I did not come out to shut up. I came out to talk and never stop talking.
Yeah, well, it's a good thing that you are. I want to say real quickly, 2 weeks after you came out publicly talking about letting your freedom fly, you met your now wife, Lauren Blitzer. Just want to ask you quickly, how's married life a year in?
Married life is great. We met at a GLSEN event, like you said, two years ago, but then we re-met. So we didn't begin dating until July, but we re-met like 6 weeks after that. And that's when I had lightning bolts in my belly, and thank God she did too, because that would have been awkward. But I knew that there was something there, and I really viewed it as a gift from God, that God said, okay, you did all this hard work. I'm going to keep you from having to do the dating world. Here's your person.
Aww.
And it's great. We love being legally married, and we're happy.
So are you writing new love songs? Is new music coming out of this new time? What's going on with your songwriting?
Yeah, actually, I've been writing some more positive songs, which is exciting. And, you know, just kind of, you know, I think if you're a good artist, you really reflect what's going on in your life. And I, you know, obviously I'm in love and married, but I also have a raised awareness of, you know, social situations and some of the struggles we have. So I'll probably be doing some writing that reflects that for my next record.
Well, it's very exciting. Folks, if you have not read her autobiography, it's fantastic. And give it to friends of yours as well. It's called Like Me, the newest CD lifted off the ground that really started all of this rolling, just the voice of her soul on this CD. And you can hear it. And everything that followed came from the music and came from the voice that she could not deny. And the film, Wish Me Away, the documentary, it's in its official theatrical release here for Pride Month in June, hopefully coming to a city near you. And she is coming to our city. Now, one of her first public appearances after she came out was serving as grand marshal for the big Chicago Gay Pride Parade. She was there with her sister and nephew. And she's coming back. She's going to headline the Backlot Bash in Chicago, which has become quite a big weekend where the girls come out to play, June 21st through 24th. She is headlining the acoustic evening on Friday, June 22nd, brought to you by HRC. It's all happening in Andersonville. Of course it is, because that's where all of us live. 5238 North Clark Street. And if you'd like tickets and information, we'll have that linked about all 4 days of entertainment. There are great bands, comedians, and Shelley, all at the backlotbashchicago.com website. That'll be linked. If you want to follow Shelley, you can go to shelley.com, also linked. And I know you're a social media person, so you want to make some invitations to people to follow you as well?
Yes, I do. I want folks to find me on Facebook and Twitter. So if you go to Facebook, just write in Shelley Wright, and that's Shelley Wright. and then click on that and hit the like button, of course. And then, but the most fun, I think, is Twitter. So follow me on at Shelley Wright, C-H-E-L-Y-W-R-I-G-H-T, and tweet me. I'll try to tweet you back.
Excellent. It's fantastic. Shelley, thank you so much. And we just continue to be fascinated by what's going to come and are just so honored to have you a part of our GLBT community as such a champion.
Well, thank you. And it's good to be a part of the community that has paved the way to make, you know, my life easier and being out. And there are a lot of people who came out way before me to no fanfare and no applause. And they are the real pioneers of the movement. And I wouldn't be here without them.
Well, everyone, I hope you have a fantastic week. Don't forget to put Saturday, June 16th at Sidetrack in your calendars for 2 o'clock. The doors open 3 o'clock. The show starts only $10, and you're entered to win fabulous prizes, including somebody at Sidetrack that day will win a trip for two to Vancouver, courtesy of Tourism Vancouver and all of their partners in Vancouver, BC. And just want to thank Shelley Wright. It was really an extraordinary conversation, and I had a really great time with her. I look forward to meeting her face-to-face and hearing her sing at the Bash, and hope all of you all will plan that as well. There's so many things to plan during Pride Month, so I hope you're really kicking it up and making June the best and most pride-filled month you can. Mitchell Fain on the next show. See you that next show.
Holding your hand.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
Will anyone ever know you like me?